Home is more important today than it's ever been. So if you're looking for the right place or trying to take advantage of those low interest rates with a refi, you should know that there's a nationally recognized mortgage originator right here in the Triad. Ashley McKenzie Sharp with Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation has been included in the top 200 loan originators in the country for 8 consecutive years. Providing personal service with experience, speed, and satisfaction is her number one priority. Trust Ashley to provide you with everything you need for a simple, rewarding home loan experience. And as a sponsor of the Triad Podcast Network, if you text or call Ashley at 336-575-9448 for your mortgage quote today, just mention the podcast, and upon receiving your quote, we'll send you a $25 local business gift card. 336-575-9448 to reach Ashley McKenzie Sharp with Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation. Ashley McKenzie Sharp, NMLS ID number 100776, is a licensed mortgage originator in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Florida. Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation, NMLS ID number 2289, is an equal housing lender.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.
I'm Laura.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Coda.
I'm Laura.
And we are the Triad Moms on the Mic.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Triad Moms on the Mic, the official podcast of Triad Moms on Maine. For more information about the show and all things parenting, make sure to check out Triad Moms on Maine's website at www.triadmomsonmaine.com. Triad Moms on Maine has daily blogs and a directory for practically everything. Be sure to subscribe to the newsletter and subscribe to this podcast so you never miss a thing. Welcome back, everybody. We're happy to have you back. We are going to be doing part two of our How to Talk to Your Children About Race episode. So this is Laura D. talking. I'm here with Laura S. and Coda, and Danette Bailey is back with us today to continue our conversation. So thanks for coming back and joining us again, Danette. We're happy to have you.
I'm very happy to be here, guys.
I really personally enjoyed the conversation we had last time and have been talking to family about things that we brought up. Actually, just last night, we were talking about different ways to help. I really liked your perspective on the ideas you gave about things to do other than the protests, which I think is just another way to look at it. You know, many things you brought up, I didn't think about it that way, or that's such a great idea. So I'm very, very thankful to have these conversations, and it's good. I'm glad we're here again. So one thing that I kind of wanted to start out with is how to start these conversations with our children. Is it something that, we just sit them down and start it, or is it more they'll come to us? Because I have a little one, so he's not going to come up to me at a year and say, "Hey, Mom, can you tell me what bias is," like Laura was saying earlier.
Right. Certainly. I think when we're dealing with the early childhood group, so like your one-year-old and the preschool age group, if we start early, that would be the preferable age to start. And it starts with just simple things. I think letting them have diverse toys that would be not just dolls that represent their culture, but dolls of different cultures. And then, we're not talking about gender bias, but not the idea that there are certain toys for boys and certain toys for girls, just letting them have a variety of toys and puzzles and books, so that then the opportunity is there in your face, because you will have pictures of children that look different from your children in books and in magazines, et cetera, that those conversations can be brought up either by them, because children certainly do initiate when they see something different, because they will recognize differences. And we talked about that last time, that recognizing those differences is totally okay. And with the older children, I think, especially if it's gotten to the point where it wasn't something that was on the radar, maybe it's a family that has not had a lot of access to people different than themselves, but not because that was planned. It's just culture, the town that you live in. And so you want to begin starting those conversations. And if you do, I think one of the best ways then would work are definitely going to be a parent initiating And as children get older, once they reach that age that I think is the best, that infant through eight, once they reach that 9-year-old and going into preteen and teen, I have found that they seem to identify better when we admit our mistakes, because they are certainly always noticing them.
That's a nice way to put it.
For some reason, they notice when we don't do something that, and I think that's partially because as children, they do tend to think that we are perfect. They think mommy and daddy are, or whoever the caregiver is, it's just, you know, in the best of circumstances, they think that person is just awesome. And then at 9 years old, their eyes, I guess, begin to open and they see we're not so perfect. And so in that instance, I think when we admit something that we do that is not perfect, or a bias that we have, and we just admit that, you know, if we say in front of them, oh my goodness, you know, we just drove up and I saw that black man get out of the car and I kind of got nervous. And I was asking myself, why did I feel that way? Gosh, why did I feel that? Like, just have that conversation right there at the store. If you've, you know, gosh, I don't like that. I felt that way. And ask your child, what do they think about it? Did they notice it? And maybe, you know, some things you and the child could do together to acknowledge that, what type of person you want to be. Because now you're involving the child and having the family values that you want, and they're part of the process. You know, once they reach that 9-year-old and up stage, they tend to appreciate less the do what I say because I'm your parent, and they appreciate more when they have an opportunity to and have an investment in the whole process. So when they feel like they're part of the rulemaking, or they're part of the value setting, or they're part of the belief system, then they buy in much better. And so I think if with that age group, admitting when you have thought something that you know in your heart is not, you know, inappropriate, or thought in your heart something that's biased. And I think sometimes we have done that with other things that have not pertained to race. We just have to use race now when we do that. That's how I would initiate that type of conversation. Just when you see it, when you, if it is not something that maybe you felt, but you see someone being mistreated, or you see someone having bias, you know, doing something that's where they're displaying bias, just pointing that out. You know what, you and I, we should talk about that later. I think you saw what I saw. I want to make sure we talk about that later. And getting their opinion.
So do you think that it's okay in these conversations to lump, I don't want to say lump it together, but like, so my oldest today asked me, I edit courses for colleges, schools and colleges. And this course was about bias and diversity. And so he was asking lots and lots of questions about, what is bias? Why do I always hear this word diversity? And so it just felt natural to me to go lots of different ways. Like with bias, do you assume that the woman is a good cook? Do you assume that the guy is good at sports? Like, in some ways, gender is maybe easier for me to talk about than race. Right. But is it okay to kind of lump those things together? Like, we, you know, we have these kind of preconceived beliefs about gender, about race, and have that conversation together?
I think that when you're talking to your children, you know your child, and so you are trying to use concepts that they already understand to help them understand, you know, a larger concept. And so, no, you don't have to specifically just start off with race, because if that is going to be a new conversation for them, then they don't have anything to gather from. So, you know, it can be really, really simple. You know, do you think that, you know, some children, they have older siblings versus younger siblings. Do you think all little children think this way? Do you think all older teenagers think this way? You know, getting some information, some background information that they already have, to then introduce that concept of race. I think that's it. You know, that's a very good thing to do. That is going to be something that adds to their understanding.
I said they do that. I mean, they think that all middle schoolers think the same way, having now read Diary of a Wimpy Kid. So they, yeah, you're right. It's kind of instinctive and natural.
Certainly, certainly. And so it's a job then to teach our children, you know, everyone does not think the same. Everybody is not the same. And really, as a parent, and then as an educator, that's our purpose, is to make our children thinking people. That is a glorious thing, to create thinking people. I think at the end when, or well, it's never the end because they're always our children, but when they leave the house, we want to see them as thinking individuals. We want to be able to give them our perspective and then hear them give their perspective. And at the end, maybe say, gosh, maybe I need to think about that some more. To me, that would be glorious, to see my children as thinking individuals. And so then that is what we're looking for. And not that we just give them the rundown. We give them the spiel. We give them the definitions and they take that and run. We want to hear, you know, why they think differently, or, you know, have an opportunity to come back and, okay, you don't understand, or you don't agree, or you haven't seen that before. How about we revisit this in 10 days and see what you think in 10 days?
Again, I said we were sitting around the fire last night talking about, you know, different current events, but one was why it's important not to stay silent, because that's definitely something that I need to get better at as a white person who will hear these things from other people that I don't agree with. Totally, absolutely, but I get too timid and I back off, and thinking about that in my role, and now I have George, you know, so my one-year-old, so I don't want him to see me doing that. So just how to approach that in a pleasant way where you're not attacking the person back, but that my son sees me setting a good example that this is not acceptable behavior and we can't just brush this off.
I love that whole topic in general, because before race ever comes into the picture, I feel that's something that for me personally, that was like my number one with my kids. I don't want them to fear and have intimidation. I want them to be able to speak up for themselves and not, you know, like someone's against them. Just like those little tiny things. For example, as a young girl, one of the topics that's very important to me is, you know, appropriate touch. And so the ability to teach my children at 2 years old what parts of their body, that your body belongs to you, and that you have a right to say, someone cannot touch you wherever you feel comfortable. You have a right to say no. It doesn't matter if they're big. It doesn't matter if they're mommies, they're daddies. You have a right to say, don't touch me there. And then you have a right to tell someone that you didn't like something. And so I think if we can start that with those types of things, then when we get to the race issue, or then when we get to things later in life, it's not so hard to speak up. And so I think as children, we want to teach them to be respectful, but to stand up for what's right. And so how do we do that when they're 3 years old? And if they come home and they tell us a story about, you know, two friends who weren't being nice, and then we ask them, or do we ask them the question, when you saw one of your friends taking a toy from your other friend, what did you do? Did you just watch them? Did you say to your friend, hey guys, I have an idea, we could share this way? Teaching our children as preschoolers how to intervene and how to stand up for what's right with those little things will help them when they become teenagers and someone tries to do the wrong thing, you know, touch them in the appropriate way, that they can say stop and no more readily. And then it helps us as an adult when we're in those situations and people do the wrong thing, because we all have been there. I have been, I won't say where, but as an educator, guys, it was really hard for me to be in the public school because, gosh, this is hard. When you're in a situation where adults forget that they're in front of children and the things that they say that are not appropriate, And I had not been used to that because I'd been self-employed for most of my entire adult life. And so having not responded in the way that most people do when one adult or two adults says something inappropriate and other adults are used to, what do? That nervous laugh, if you've ever been in that situation where mm-hmm, someone said mm-hmm. something appropriate and you do that, or oh my, but yeah. you don't say, excuse me, or we don't speak that way, or I don't, you don't go to that next level. And this is why, though, as an adult, your paycheck may depend on your ability to, as they may say, compromise with these people or be able to deal with these people in a way that doesn't cause confrontation. And so now you've gone, as an adult, it's gone all the way into, I don't want to be confrontational. So I say nothing. And because what is dependent upon it? Well, my job may depend on my ability not to be confrontational. My being with my family, maybe I have an in-law who's not the best to get along with, and so my ability to be able to have family time, enjoyable family time, and not be confrontational. So what happens as an adult? We have a lot of times, I wouldn't say opportunities because they're not, they have a lot of occasions where we are having to stifle ourselves and not say, this is not a conversation for me, or this is not something that I'd like to be around, so I'm going to remove myself because this is that we don't. We sit there quietly, or we do the nervous laugh, or we shake our heads, with a smirk because we're just so nervous.
Do you think some of that is a woman thing?
Yes,
like women are taught to be. I mean, I certainly mm-hmm. was taught to be polite, and I have a lot of trouble sticking up for myself, sticking up for other people, mm-hmm. because I think it was really drilled into me. We do not rock the boat. We yep. do not cause controversy. We are polite and quiet, and anything else is wrong. And as an adult, I'm really struggling to wrap my mind around the idea that, like, the person calling the injustice is not the problem. They're not inciting it. It's the other person who ought to be ashamed. And yet, like, we're so afraid of controversy and discomfort and hard conversations that it's hard. And I've even caught myself doing that with the kids. Like, could you please just, for the love of God, not cause another fight? Even though the person who's like causing the fight, in quotes, right. is actually responding to poor behavior on the part of the right. other sibling.
Right.
So it's hard.
So with our kids, then we want to give them some examples. I love role playing. And, taking the smallest things and role playing, especially before that age of 9, when they love us and they'll just sit and be up under us. So that's, you have to get them away. So that's the opportunity to do their role playing. But I love role playing. Like I said, the example of at preschool and asking your 3-year-old how they helped. But I think if we do those examples, the role playing, we can show our children how to stick up for themselves or how to act on behalf of someone else respectfully, how to stay calm when we speak, how to think when we speak, how it's okay to say, you know what, I need to think about what you just said, so I'm going to walk away. And when I have something that's useful, I'll come back to this conversation because right now I don't have anything useful to add. What can we tell our children so that they can practice now, so that they can be better than we are as adults in interacting with other people when people do the wrong thing? But the biggest thing we have to teach our children is that when we stay silent, when something wrong is occurring, we are participants. If we drill that in, that we are participants, by the time they become an adult, that is the question that will always be in their head. Do I want to participate in this? Because we see lots of people that get in trouble for, like, we just had the incident here in Winston-Salem. Lots of people getting in trouble for, and their friends and family, I'm sure, will tell you, my family member is a good person. That is what they're going to say. My family member is a good person, and this is one incident that happened. And I can bet you that all of those people have been in instances where in the beginning something pricked and they didn't like it. But it's that culture of peer pressure. Everybody's doing it and I need my job. And so your job becomes more important than saying, I will not participate in this thing that is wrong. That if you guys are going to do this, I am done. I am leaving this. And, or if you guys are going to do this, I'm going to report you, or I'm going to, you know, out loud say that you are wrong. And if at 3 and 5 and 8 and 10 and 12, you get to do that, it's going to be much easier when you're 30 and 40 and you have a job where people are saying and doing the wrong things and are expecting you to just stand there and watch. And as a result, that means you are participating.
Really true.
I like that way of explaining that, like, you are a participant if you choose not to stand up.
And like, I love the idea
that I think would resonate with little kids.
Yeah, and I love the idea of starting as soon as you can, because, like you said, in 30 years, hopefully they're going to be the change. Maybe, you know, like, hopefully it's going to change before then, but you know what I mean. Like,
yes, certainly.
They're not going to be afraid to just sit back and watch and participate, yes. Like you say. They're going to be, they're going to have more conviction in the decision to stand up for the right thing.
Certainly.
Rather than kind of like what Laura was saying earlier, like as women, it's hard to stand up because we've been taught to kind of like be meek and mild.
Right.
And having two daughters, that's important for me to teach them, like, no, it's okay to say no. It's okay to stand up for what you believe in and to do the right thing.
Certainly. And so then we have to model that. And so when that, I say, whenever we're in a situation and that heart starts beating or you're getting sweaty or you're like, you almost zone out even when you hear someone say something that's inappropriate. Usually it's words, unfortunately, but usually it's words. Usually we don't see people just haul off and do something, you know, crazy in front of us. Usually it's words. But the problem is that a pattern develops. So it's words for a while to that one day when it's something terrible, awful. And then, you know, are you the person that's participating in this event that will have you with a mugshot on TV after you've had a whole career, a great career, and a community that loves you and a church that loves you, and they see that? I think that first, if being an early childhood person, I'm certain I could go back and interview them and find lots of instances starting from childhood where they had to quietly participate or thought they had to because they didn't learn to speak up for themselves at 3 and 5 and 10.
All right, if you're enjoying this podcast, then I hope you'll take just a quick second to hear about the folks that make it all possible. And that's the Ginther Group, a Triad real estate team with a vast local knowledge. Don't believe me? Hear it for yourself by listening to their real estate show right here on the Triad Podcast Network. I'm not even in the market, and I don't know what I'd do without an ally like Blake Ginther and the Ginther Group. They've helped me find a plumber, a roofer, and even helped my family save hundreds each month when we refinanced our home. Now imagine how they can help if you are in the market. They can help you get started with an evaluation to list and market your home. So if you're thinking of buying or selling in the Triad, call the Ginther Group at 336-283-8689 or find them online at theginthergroup.com. Now back to the show.
One thing I was thinking about when we were getting ready for this episode, at the end of the last episode, we asked for some questions from listeners, or we asked also on our website, and we didn't get a ton of response. And Danette, you were saying one reason, there's many reasons, but could be, I mean, it's a tough topic, and people back off and get scared. And one phrase that I read was respectful curiosity. And I really like that term just because I feel like throughout this whole time, you've just been really explaining that it's better to have these questions and to address them than just to sit and stew in your ignorance and assume that one day magically you're going to know what the right thing to do is. I'd much rather hear it and be told that no, you're not innately evil. You just want to be better. And I just like the respectful curiosity. There's a way to go about it for sure.
Certainly.
So I really appreciate all your time with this. And I understand that some people might not be ready, but hopefully this can push them in the right direction.
And I think really too, another thing would be just people don't even know what to ask. Again, this is so different from what we have seen in the past. For me, I think I've seen so many people respond as if the sentiment that's going on now as a result of this is bad. You know, I don't think it's bad. I think that we have people whose lives, unfortunately, are being given to this, whether it be that they lost their life or they lost their career. But as a result, we're having conversations that we would not have had.
Right.
And so this is a time to appreciate. And the gift that we could give is to try to learn, even if at first that learning is quiet. If we have to learn quietly, then learn quietly. You know, not everyone has to be vocal. Learn quietly, learn slowly if you have to, but just learn, you know, find out something. Commit even to one change. Certainly we would expect our young children, you know, they can make lots of strides with this and they will be a change just like we saw a change in other decades. But our older respected folk can commit to making one change. They can ask themselves, what is one change that I can make that can contribute to this on a positive level? If I think what I'm seeing is negative, then how do I be a positive as opposed to complaining or lamenting? Then what one change could I make as a positive that would be helpful? For some, it might just be not saying anything because the things that were said in the past were so hurtful. For some, it might be if they have thought that they were, like say, quote, woke. it might be revisiting and asking themselves or asking someone different than themselves what their perspective would be on that, because you know, none of us in any subject should think we are all wise. We all have something to learn. And then for some it could be, I just think what we talked about earlier, there's one of the simplest things we could do is just grab a friend. Do you know, like, that's what that may sound so simple, but, you know, I'm an early educator and that's what we teach the young children. Like, the first day of preschool, I just had my first day starting back this week. It's like the first day, you know, we open up, like, we have friends, find a friend.
Aww. Do you know what I mean?
That's the first thing that we could do. Find a friend, like find someone who's different from yourself that you can engage with and learn about and as a result, be better. I think some of the adults should probably read some of the kid books that we read some of the kid books that to help them learn about racism or not so much even racism, but just, you know, being friendly with people different from ourselves. I think some of the adults and, you know, grandparents and great-grandparents could probably benefit from reading some of those books themselves.
Absolutely. And I was kind of hoping that this would come organically and maybe it could kind of piggyback off a little of a previous discussion, but how do we explain to our kids the difference between the Black Lives Matter movement and then those who are coming in? And in my opinion, kind of discounting that, saying all lives matter, because that totally takes away from what the movement is. And just a way to, like, maybe put it in more kid-friendly terms once they're able to kind of recognize that what that is. You know, I have a 2-year-old and she doesn't really know what that is yet, but you know, a kid who's 7, 8, 9, 10 is probably recognizing that that's everything.
Certainly. And it's another good time. I think this is one of those times again that, you know, unfortunately, you know, maybe it'll be 50 years from now, people will be reflecting on this and saying, oh, what a great time it was. And right now it seems icky for some people, unfortunately. But when I actually wrote a blog on this too, the whole idea that that someone would feel a need to protest the Black Lives Matter by having a whole All Lives Matter, or, you know, the other things that matter that are being added. I think it's unfortunate. I think that the groups, and I will say from my own perspective, the maybe it seems like that a Christian group that would say that seems to have an issue with the Black Lives Matter more, I would say it would have been so awesome if the Christians, and what I mean is that people who say they love God, people who say they put God first, it would have been so awesome if they would have come up with the All Lives Matter logo first. Man, I mean, I think that if they would have done that, if we would have done that, as people who say we love God would have, before all this happened, would have come out with the All Lives Matter and talked about how we appreciate all people. I mean, that the angels in heaven probably wanted that one first, but it didn't happen. And unfortunately, it didn't happen because we are a society that is complacent. And so when things seem to be going smooth, what is it? We don't rock the boat. And when even there's that little uncomfortability there, that one thing that we saw, we still don't want to rock the boat. And so having said All Lives Matter before any of this would have happened would have been kind of rocking the boat, right? So then the boat was rocked for us. And so then Black Lives Matter had to be said. Not that someone, you know, other people don't matter. And again, as an early childhood expert, as a mom, I think that if I have, well, I have three children. I'll give you an example. I have three children. And if one of them is struggling and I decide that I want the family to rally around one of my children to help them in their struggle, and I'm sure many families can identify with maybe something that one child maybe had a struggle with, or one parent, maybe illness, anything. We would never expect the other children in the family to say, well, why are you rallying all around sister? You know, I'm brother and I'm as important. Or why are you rallying around father? I'm mother. I'm just as important. On Mother's Day, we never, you know, maybe except in jest, decide we're going to protest the mothers because fathers are just important and vice versa. So the idea that saying Black Lives Matter equates to other people don't matter, it's just not realistic, and it quite frankly is a trick. None of us should allow ourselves to be tricked by something so foolish. No, I have preschoolers here. When I give one a hug, well, more so before COVID with hugs, but when I give one a hug, none of them thinks that they are not as important as the one who's getting hugged. Not one of them. When one of their birthdays is celebrated, not one of the others thinks that they are not as important to Ms. Bailey, because they are, and Ms. Bailey can't wait to celebrate them as well. So whenever we have that idea that celebrating you or acting on your behalf or helping you makes me less, if you have, that means I have less. If you are acknowledged, that means I am feared. If we do the opposites, that opposite idea every single time, it's chaos. When we teach children, when little Sally has, little Jamaica has too, because we're at preschool and everybody's getting milk. Everybody's getting a snack. Just because one child got their snack first does not mean the rest of you are not getting a snack. We are all getting. And so as adults, it's kind of sad that we haven't learned from our preschool years that because one group or one person gets something or is finally even acknowledged that they have been hurt. Because this is the other thing. It's that, you know, that's like the small way. I just think I will say that as a child, I experienced abuse, and so I can talk about that with some intelligence. As when you have suffered any type of trauma, and people or an institution would try to make you feel as though that trauma is your fault. So any woman that would have been raped, if the courts would make them feel like it's their fault, you know, well, what were you wearing or how many drinks did you have? If someone were to become ill and others are saying, well, you know, did you take care of yourself? I mean, all these ideas that it could be that your trauma, your pain is as a result of your fault. And so then you don't get any help. Or even if it's not your help, not your fault, it's not my problem because it's going to take something away from me. Or the pain that you have suffered is, I had nothing to do with it. I had nothing to do with your pain. And so the idea that you would require me to help you is just doesn't make any sense. Well, this is something that we do as a society and so many things because it's just the right godly thing to do to help someone who has been hurt. As in a family situation, when our children fall, we don't say it was your fault, get yourself up. We comfort our children when they hurt themselves. And then we teach them how to keep from hurting themselves. If we have a situation where our teenage children, something happens to them, even if they were at the wrong place at the wrong time, or I mean, so many things happen to our teenagers that, you know, that might have nothing to do with race. The first thing is not to start accusing our children or our teenagers of and saying all the things that they've done wrong. The first thing we do is try to comfort them and help them. The idea then that because, you know, you weren't there when Jim Crow occurred, for example, or you weren't there when slavery occurred, for example, that has nothing to do with you. And so you don't even want to be a part of that conversation out. It's just not, how do we say in preschool? It's just not a nice thought to have. It's just not, it just doesn't demonstrate kindness. It doesn't demonstrate a thinking person. Thinking people want a better society. Thinking people want people to get along, because when people get along, there's less crime. When people get along, you know, there are less taxes, actually. When people get along, there's less money being spent and on services like, you know, child abuse, etc. When people are just being taught how to do the right thing. And so the idea that there's a group of people that you feel that, you know, have brought these things on themselves, or they need to get over it, or all the different things that you hear, it just doesn't demonstrate a thinking person.
Right. Well,
there's a lot to think about. Well, that was a lot. I don't know. I'm learning so much. And just my brain is constantly just thinking about how I can teach my kids and like how to implement this in my home.
Yeah. So may I say with the Black Lives Matter, I think, you know, there are lots of different organizations for different things, right? And I think that some people are giving themselves an okay or a pass because they don't agree with an organization's values, for example. And so if that be the case, I would like to say that the words Black Lives Matter, I think should be separated from the organization in terms of, as a thinking person, the value. So if you value the sentiment that Black Lives Matter, that should be enough to participate and demonstrating that Black Lives Matter. it doesn't mean that you sign up with the organization and become, I mean, that's a value that's different where you put your money in. The value of, I believe that Black Lives Matter, and so I demonstrate, how do we personally demonstrate that Black Lives Matter? And again, to me, that's in our daily lives. Maybe it is simply when you walk somewhere that you see someone that looks different from yourself, smile at them, because the tension is in the air that when you go somewhere that and you're the only person of color, that maybe the white people don't want you there. So one day it could just be that you're smiling because you're making it known, you know what, I think you can be wherever you want to be. It's just, I think people give themselves or try to give themselves excuses and passes why they don't have to do the right thing by grasping on to, I don't agree with a particular organization as opposed, for example, I mean, the NAACP, and, you know, they have lots of different things that are part of their mission. And maybe you don't believe or agree with every single thing that's part of the mission. But if you are a manager, or you are a supervisor, or you are a hiring agent, do you on purpose make sure that your staff is diverse because you believe that diversity is beneficial to everyone? Or do you happen to have an all-white staff and you just happen not to have noticed it? You know, you can't, you notice it.
Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time here again. I really appreciate you hopping on here two times now and chatting with us and helping us learn and everyone, all the listeners learn. Is there anything that you would like to leave us with? Or, I mean, I've learned a lot.
Me too. Well, I think what I said earlier, if I would leave you with anyone, anything, because I think, you know, some of the older folks or the people who haven't had much exposure have the biggest thing, and go to the library and just give some of the books that are for the children. Don't try to read, you know, the books with the college professors and the learned. Just get some of the children's books. You know, one of the books that I read to the kids today is Courage of the Blue Boy. It was a really good book. I liked it, so I wrote it down to make sure I mentioned it. It's for, you know, preschoolers, but these things help you think, and thinking on a small level helps us think on big levels. If it's intentional, just by mistake thinking on a small level, you stay small, but purposely, intentionally thinking something small and then how can I make that bigger? That's why I would say that, you know, so go to the library and get some books that are for the children on race and bias and raising your mixed children and your mixed grandchildren, because they are out there, and you need to know that just because you have mixed children in your family or in your extended family does not automatically mean that you do not have bias and are no longer racist.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I'll have to check out that book. I'm excited. It's on Amazon.
I have it right now. There might be a couple, but.
Perfect. Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys.
Thanks for both episodes. And hopefully you'll come back and join us again soon. We loved having you. And
You guys are awesome.
Everyone enjoyed listening, so we'd love to have you back another time to talk about anything.
Yeah, something simple like cupcakes or something.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
All right, guys, thank you.
So that's about it for us today. If you have a show idea or you just want to chat with us, we'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us an email at triadmomsonthemic@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the Teen Mom website at www.triadmomsonmaine.com and make sure to subscribe to this podcast. Stay well, everyone.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode on the Triad Podcast Network. Our mission is simple: provide information, advice, and stories about the people and places that make the North Carolina Triad such a great place to be. You can find us by searching Triad Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much wherever you like to listen. If you like what you heard and want to support the show and those that contribute, we would truly appreciate a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. It helps spread the word along, as do your shares on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Triad Podcast. To get in touch with us, simply email info@triadpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.